That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Ah.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. That was a bit of a two Ronnies style intro, Kieran, so let's continue the theme. We have a packed show today, but first, some news. And our first news story is that referee Lee Mason has been given the keys to the Borough of Croydon for services to comedy.
Yes, yeah.
Sorry, Kieran. I promised so many people tweeted me yesterday to say, don't, it's not Kieran's fault, don't ever go. But it's just, I went to bed chuckling, it's just hilarious.
I've never seen anything like it.
No. I don't think anyone's thinking. If it had happened to Man City, I'd have gone, oh dear, that's an interesting incident, isn't it? But, you know. I can share your frustration, Kieran. It was a bizarre incident, but unfortunately, I can't let you talk about it because it has no relation to football finance. So let's move on.
Well, it does, because if we get relegated on the back of it, it's going to cost us a fortune. But also, it doesn't ignore the fact that we managed to be awarded two penalties and then failed to put it away. And yeah, failing it to put, you know, we did exactly the same against you. You know, it's all very nice playing this type of football, but you've got to close the deal. In certain respects, Kevin, it reminds me of my adolescence. We're on a Friday or Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I'd put on my best gear. I'd head down to the Pink Coconut. I'd give some of my best lines. I'd throw some really good shapes on the dance floor, and you know, make a connection. And then say, yeah, fancy coming back to my place. Mm. And yeah, the person was up for it. And then I get back to my moped and they change their mind. And that's where Brighton's football is at present.
That's an interesting. I think Graham Potter would quite like that analogy. Ian Holloway would definitely be up for that analogy. Yeah, well, I was on the way to the moped outside the Pink Coconut, and then suddenly the pillion was empty.
Exactly.
It was funny enough. I had virtual bets with my son because we were both convinced that Lee Mason was just going to keep giving penalties in the second half, just to make up for what happened. He realised what an enormous error he'd made. But then it was like you say, it's pointless giving. I just love the fact that I don't fully understand expected goal thingy, but yours has been 7.7 in the last three games.
Yeah,
you've scored one goal at 66 attempts. Never mind. Well, you can seasonally adjust it, Kieran. You'll be fine. But the first proper news story, Kieran, you were actually in because you were in front of a group of MPs this week to talk about gambling in football. How did that go?
I was asked to talk to the all-party parliamentary group in respect on gambling harm. There was a pretty big audience. It was some people from Parliament, you know, the likes of Ian Duncan-Smith. Mm. There were some people from the football industry who'd had problems with gambling. So Peter Shilton, he spoke about on his struggle. There was a young lad who played for Morton and then become addicted to gambling, and now he goes through an education, and there was James, who we'd spoken to recently. So it was it was an audience. My job there, the question was, can football afford to play without gambling sponsorship? And based on my figures, it will be a wee bit more difficult But yeah, it can. So you know, these people who are apologists for the industry, saying it's an essential part of the game. But I think we've got to look at broader issues, because it's not just front of shirt sponsorship. It's the fact that we're now being carpet bombed. As an experiment, I don't gamble. You know, once a year on the national. You know, I'm the same as that person. I don't. I like numbers too much to lose money to a gambling organization. Because
fair point.
As an experiment, I opened up an account with William Hill on Monday, just to see what it was like. Placed a small wager, which you have seen, on Crystal Palace to beat Brighton, then you know, took the winnings, closed the I took the money out of the account, and every day since then, I've received emails from William Hill, but it's sort of slightly insidious, because it's Chloe at William Hill or Alice from William Hill. Yeah. Oh, Kieran, yo, congratulations on you in the other night. And we're going to offer you 60 free spins on. What 60 free spins is, Kevin, is beyond me. I don't really understand these things. But, you know, for anybody that has had a problem with gambling, it's the fact that once you're in their ecosystem, it's really difficult to escape. Mm. They've got your phone number. They've got your email address. Yes, I know you can opt out, but you know, these things take time. And for those people who have got that daily struggle to keep away from gambling, because it's a bit like alcohol. You know, one is one too many, and 12 is never enough. Yeah. And that's the same for people that have this problem. You are faced with the normalization. You know, it's more enjoyable when you have a gamble, things of this nature. Yeah. So the overwhelming consensus was that the status quo is not appropriate. It's not protecting people who are in vulnerable positions. And you know, going forwards, ultimately, it's got to be an issue which is dealt with by government, because self-regulation simply doesn't enough. You know, self-regulation is what's the minimum we can get away with. You know, what's the tokenism? You know, you know, when the fun stop. Yeah. If you're a gambling addict, there is no fun.
Yeah, and also when you see the same people, I'm a big fan of Jess Stelling as a broadcaster, but when you see the same people doing adverts for you to gamble, and then doing separate adverts for you to gamble responsibly, then that message does get blurred, doesn't it? Of course it does. And we had several tweets from people who tried to close their betting accounts down after they listened to our interview with James from Gambling Real Lives. And they said it was virtually impossible to close it down, because they just kept being led away from the, you know, I want to end this now site to something else. And then, as you say, being offered inducements to stay. I don't approve, Kieran, of people hedging their bets on their own team losing. But, you know, in those circumstances, I think it was very wise of you to foresee that we were going to score that last minute goal, because we were so much in control of that situation that we knew exactly when we were going to score. Do you get? It's obviously impossible for you to judge from the tone of the MP's questions, Kieran, but do you get the feeling from the mood music that's coming out of Parliament that the days of gambling betting sponsorship are nearly over? Because it seems to me that this is an issue that Parliament are taking very seriously. All of a sudden, in the last year, it seems that this is an issue that looks to me like it's heading inevitably for an end to gambling sponsorship within the next decade or so.
I think if it is in a decade, the gambling industry will be absolutely delighted, because we've seen moves elsewhere in Europe to stop this. And if it's just front of shirt sponsorship which is banned, actually the gambling companies won't be too bothered, because Paddy Power, I don't think they're sponsoring a club. But yeah, I know they had their wacky arrangement with Huddersfield Town just over a year ago. But William Hill don't, Ladbrokes don't, Coral don't. It's the non-stop advertisements which I think are more of an issue. And it's not just football, because like the rest of the nation, or many of the rest of the nation, you know, I'm indoors most of the time. Occasionally the Baroness will be watching some mid-morning channel, and now it's Foxy Bingo and other forms of gambling. And again, once you're in, you're in. The the sense that I got from the parliamentarians, and you know, that one was very, very anti the position we're in, is that it's a case of when rather than if. But my concern is that if we just go down the tokenistic route of getting rid of front of shirt sponsorship and feeling that the issue has been addressed, then that's just a drop in the ocean, because many of these gambling companies are not based in the UK. They're what are referred to as white label sponsors, where you know, ManBetX and W88 and you know, LoveBet or whatever, they don't even have a presence in the UK. So getting rid of that isn't going to impact. Their relationships are all to do with Asian betting, and things are... to say that they are complex over there is somewhat of an understatement.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on this story, Kieran, because we've got a lot of interesting questions today, because it is technically questions day. But those Foxy Bingo adverts in particular really annoy me, because initially they're selling you conversation with like-minded, and it's women in the advert. It's just like, you know, there's nothing to do during lockdown. Why not get on board this website and chat to women in your situation? Oh, and while you're there, it'll be more fun if you throw, and it's that lack of honesty. I wouldn't mind if they said, look, here's a gambling site. You could lose some money, you could win. Now, I would kind of put up with that to an extent. I would be more impressed with that level of honesty than this kind of sneaky ninja style of advertising, which is, you know, there's a lot of vulnerable people, especially during lockdown. There's so many people who are vulnerable and miserable and lost who think, oh, well, I will chat to people. And they've obviously got, as I know this for a fact, that they have people who, in the chat room, you know, inverted commas, genuine people in the chat room who are employees of the company, who are then encouraged, you know, they'll chat about what's the vaccinations and the cat, and then say, all right, let's have a bit of bingo. And it's just, that's got to stop. Anyway, Kieran. As you predicted, there is another bit of good news to add to the light at the tunnel, end of the tunnel we were discussing earlier this week, because it looks like all Premier League football fans will get a chance, at least, to see their team play before the season ends.
Yes, there have been a few complications with regard to the country coming out of part of the lockdown on May the 17th, which is... 2 days after the FA Cup final and effectively a week before the final set of fixtures. And, you know, it has been said, well, that means that half the clubs in the Premier League are going to get the benefit of a crowd behind them and half aren't, which you know, it's a small difference that a crowd can make, but it is a difference. And we've got, you know, we've got Fulham versus Newcastle. Yeah. And I'm hoping that will be a big match for the rest of the Premier League. And nobody else has got any interest in it. It's the Premier League are now thinking they've got another set of midweek fixtures, which could be shifted to sort of the 18th or 19th of May, and that wouldn't upset the broadcasters. It would therefore allow every club in the Premier League to have a match taking place before crowds, and the guidance we're getting from government, it's going to be I think the lower of 10,000 or 25% of capacity. Yeah. So if that does go ahead, I think it'll be good for football, it'll be good for football fans, and it'd be good for the players, because you know, whilst we are watching these matches, we've said all along, it's not the same.
No, God, imagine that game yesterday if there'd been a full crowd. That'd be fine. All right, so that is good news anyway. But it is questions day, Kieran, and we do need to move on, because we've got some interesting questions, but none of them are quick answers by the look of it. And the first one comes from Tanaka Hakuna, who says, can you explain why Liverpool can claim money from FIFA to cover Joe Gomez's basic pay while he's out injured?
Yes, this is all due to the FIFA Club Protection Programme, which is an insurance policy offered by FIFA. When a player is on international duty, he's effectively being loaned by his parent club to the International Federation. Mm. And of course, there's a risk of injury when this takes place. So FIFA agreed with the individual leagues and with clubs that they would set up some form of insurance program. And the way that it works is that if a player is injured on international duty and is subsequently unable to play for a period of 28 days or more, then the scheme kicks in. So I think in respect of Joe Gomez, we're talking around about £2 million in wages, which he's earned since his injury when he was on playing. Well, I think it was even in training for England.
Yeah,
and that is now being covered. And if you take a look at FIFA's account, and of course I do, then this sum is quite substantial. It was over $25 million in 2019. During World Cup years, it always tends to rise because clearly players do get injured during the competition itself. And I think it's a fair approach. The players all want to represent their country, and we will want that as well. But there is a risk, and they are also employees of a third party. So that's the way that the system works. And you know, everybody wishes Joe Gomez a swift recovery. The FIFA financial director will be cheering on him on even more.
Presumably there are some kind of medical protocols involved as well, just to avoid the chance that Joe Gomez may have already had, you know, a strain or a stress injury from training with Liverpool. There must be some kind of proof required that the actual injury was entirely caused during international duty, presumably.
Yes, I mean, remember, normally the club doctor at the parent club would have submitted any outstanding niggles just to let the international team doctors be aware. More importantly than that, yes, Liverpool have managed to get the £2 million of Joe Gomez's salary back, but it's impacted them far worse on the pitch,
of course,
since then. That's why we see some players are fairly legendary over a period of time for getting injuries and being unable to fulfil their international obligations.
You know, I imagine of all the footballing organisations and clubs that we talk about, the one that would least like you to look at their accounts is FIFA, I imagine. I imagine there would be a certain tremor, certain freeze under there. Oh my God, Kieran McGuire's looking at us. Just close that Bahamas final immediately. Now, Farhad Alkadi has one of those questions that I think you could answer with one word, but it probably deserves a whole pod. But it's a very interesting question. And Farhad Alkadi says, after the Man City UEFA case, Wigan going into administration, and many, many other financial issues around the world of football, don't you think the football industry and other sports now needs a set of specific accounting standards besides the normal standards, such as GAAP, which is generally accepted accounting principles? Well, my answer would be yes. And secondly, I hope that the GAAP includes don't get involved with the Russian mafia, Kieran. That'd be rule number three, certainly, of generally accepted accounting principles. I weren't aware of these generally accepted accounting principles. Are they generally accepted, Kieran?
Yes, they are. It's universal. Every country, you can have either your local rules or most countries, with the exception of the USA, apply the international rules.
Okay. And so the question then, I mean, it seems to me a no-brainer that you would certainly have a set of specific accounting standards, wouldn't you, for each sport?
My gut reaction is no.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is what you need is an enhanced version of what we have applying to all other industries, because football – whether we like it or not, is part of the service sector. It's part of the entertainment sector in the world, especially in the UK and other countries in Europe and South America and so on. There are some unique issues, and what we need is a better regulator. So at present, if we have specific rules which apply to football, such as financial fair play, such as the football creditors rule, such as various other bits and pieces in terms of what is disclosed and not disclosed, we have self-regulation in the sense that the Premier League, you need 14 votes out of 20. There are certain voting protocols in the EFL, and all of a sudden, self-interest applies. So it used to be that some clubs, and we'll be returning to this later, some clubs used to fully disclose the transfer fees they played on every single transfer. Mm. Now, you and I, and I think 99.99% of football fans, we'd like that to be the de facto rule because it's our club. Just how much have we wasted on that useless centre forward? It's not going to make him better or worse, but we are the biggest stakeholders in the game. But the football club owners say, well, we don't legally have to do that, so therefore we're not going to. And in my view, self-regulation is a bit like self-abuse. It makes you very short-sighted in terms of disclosure and decision-making and things of that nature. And as a consequence, I think we get left with sort of the lowest common denominator in terms of what we see, which is frustrating because sometimes I think it's important to be aware of what's taking place. Not all fans are interested in the finances of their clubs, and fully rightly so. But if you've got one or two at every club, it does help to keep the club being called to account.
Mm. I once asked an optician about the fabled link between self-abuse and short-sightedness, and he said, not proven.
Right.
I don't think he was particularly impressed by the question, but he said there was no actual scientific evidence. Traditionally, St. Patrick's Day is for pubs, not pubes. But Manscaped is the global leader for below-the-waist grooming, and they sponsored this show to ensure you have the best tools for your ball trimming experience. If you plan on getting lucky this St. Patrick's Day, then you may as well use code PRICEOFFOOTBALL at manscaped.com for 20% off and free international shipping.
And you're in luck because the Manscaped Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Included in this new package is the Weed Whacker, which is an ear and nose hair trimmer. And it's waterproof and uses a 9,000 revolutions per minute motor. It's powered 360 degrees rotary dual blade system, and I have no idea what that means. However, 79% of partners polled admitted that long nose hair is a major turnoff. Why not use the best tools for the job here? Now, this bundle includes the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, the best trimmer on the market for your balls, butt and body. You'll feel confident shaving your thunder down under. And you can also get festive and safely shave a shamrock in your pubes. Though, if you are doing a shamrock and it's already green down there, I'd recommend getting some penicillin too.
Do you know, if my poor departed mother, God rest her soul, knew that I was using St. Patrick's Day to encourage people to buy a pube shaving device, she'd be having serious words with all of us. Kieran, like, of course you need to shamrock in your pubes on St. Patrick's Day. It's virtually one of the only things you can do to celebrate at this moment. And you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. There's gold at the end of the rainbow with Manscaped. Interesting that you should mention football as part of the entertainment sector, and Lee Mason certainly was part of the entertainment sector yesterday, God bless him. But it does lead us on to a question from Tony McNeary. And again, this is one of those questions that I tried to sort of sub down, but I it wouldn't do justice to the question if I didn't read it in its full glory. It's a very interesting one. Tony McNeary says, on a recent Financial Times video conference, I must have missed that one, I don't know. I must have a word with my PA about my diary service. But on a recent Financial Times video conference, Paolo Del Pino, CEO of Serie A in Italy, of course, said that in joining with private equity, the new business model for Serie A is, and I quote, the strategic goal of becoming a media company. He said that football clubs are in the entertainment industry, as you said, and should focus on content distribution. But on the same panel, however, Susan Whelan, CEO of Leicester City, said clubs should seek, and again I quote, merit through the domestic leagues. Now, Tony would like to know what you think about these two opposing propositions.
Well, I think the football industry, and I hate to think of it as an industry. You and I are both football fans who, we have connections in the world of football, but we still go along to shout and scream and abuse Lee Mason and things of that nature.
He won't be refereeing any Brighton games at home. That's one thing. I'm not suggesting that the PGMOL, the professional referees, wouldn't just be fair in these things. But I think they'll probably say, give it till March before Lee Mason gets a game in the goal. Make it an evening game in the Carabao Cup. That'd be fine. No, you imagine the noise is going to be when they say tonight's referee is Lee Mason. Oh, there'll be cups of hummus flying all over the place, won't there?
Yes.
Very hard to get red, and it's very hard to get red wine stains out of a referee's costume, referee's costume. Anyways, yes, Kieran, carry on with your.
Anyway, so in terms of where we are, there are two issues that the clubs are dealing with. First of all, the desire to win trophies, the desire to better themselves, the desire to win matches, and which is, you know, the fan base. It's the sporting focus. It's the sporting priority of the club. And we hope, and the romantic in us believes that at the start of the season, all clubs have an equal chance, blah, blah, blah. We know it's not true, really. Mm. And then we are seeing increasingly the demands and the desires of the capitalist, yeah, and that's not, I'm not being critical of the capitalist system, but the capitalist bottom line focus, private equity companies, and I know some people that work for companies which have been acquired by private equity companies come in and they look at every single piece of expenditure, they cut back on everything which they consider to be waste, and their aim is financial. Now, the reason why I think this is an issue is that if there is increasing ownership in the game from private equity and areas of that nature, then the creeping isolationism of the larger clubs, in the sense that they want automatic entry into the Champions League, they don't want to play so many domestic fixtures, they want to go on more lucrative pre-season tours, that will become the football of the future, and we will very much be sort of in a Marie Antoinette let them eat cake position if we are not. It's not just fans of our clubs, Brighton and Crystal Palace, it's those clubs in the Championship that want to get into the Premier League, and there are some fantastically amazing clubs in that division with rich histories, Forest, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Middlesbrough, Sunderland, and so on. It's going to make it. Football is not going to be the same for them because they're going to struggle to get in, and it's going to make clubs outside of the elite fairly worthless because the chance for an investor to come in and change the dynamics of a football club, as we've seen with Manchester City and Chelsea. And we can be critical of some issues to do with the owners. But for the fans of those clubs, it's happy days. You won't hear City fans or Chelsea fans grumbling about Sheikh Mansour or Abramovich. And it's also made the Premier League more competitive because the Premier League was boring prior to Abramovich turning up. Mm. That's where we are, and the game is in conflict, unfortunately, money normally wins in these situations.
Mm. Do you know, this is slightly off piece, but I always feel a bit sorry for Marie Antoinette because the word she used, it wasn't cake. The word she used was a French word that we have no translation for, which is a kind of bread. And what she actually said is, "Why is there not enough bread for them to eat?" But that's what history does, unfortunately. Robert Webster, I think I'm probably interpreting this as a plaintive question, but Robert Webster has a slightly plaintive question, which is, please, could you give us an update on Wigan? And I noticed a strap on Sky Sports News yesterday, which basically said the administrators say it's all good, don't worry. But what is the latest update on Wigan?
Well, the latest update on Wigan is that there are no updates on Wigan. I mean, the administrators, and I've been, I've pointed fingers at them in terms of the very lucrative nature of being in charge of Wigan Athletic as far as they are concerned. They were putting up weekly updates on the club website. And the most recent one, which I think fans would have managed to draw some hope from, was along the lines of there were half a dozen interested parties. After getting their fingers burnt the last time, the administrators said, we're not going to give exclusivity to a potential owner. So now it's, you know, highest bidder, who gets themselves over the line the fastest, with the best offer. So that all seemed positive. There'd been a joint meeting with the EFL and one possible buyer. Some of the other buyers appeared to be able to provide proof of funds. So it looked all good. And then this Friday's update, because I do pop into the Wigan website each week to see what's going on, they've said, we're not going to give any more weekly updates.
Oh.
Why not? What, you know, even no news is news.
Sure, of course.
So, yeah, I think that's... Yeah, part of me says, well, okay, somebody's being charged £400 an hour to write this up on the club website. So, you know, perhaps it's saving a bit of money. But fans deserve more. You know, we do need a bit more transparency.
Of course.
Yes, there has to be some privacy in terms of negotiations and things of that nature. But at least a weekly progress report isn't too much to ask.
Yeah, I can just about accept it. I don't agree with it. But if a new club owner says on the club website, look, the finances of the club are my business and not yours, that's one thing. But when it's the future of the club at stake, then you're 100% guaranteed you have to give fans a weekly update. Even as you say, it's to refresh the notice that says, unfortunately, there's no news. But you can't do that to fans. You can't just give them no information, because the problem is that then they start to speculate and then rumours spread and then fans are even more miserable than they are now. So that's not good news. Our next question is from Doug, just Doug. And that's fine. You don't have to give surnames. But, you know, just to let you know, we're not grasses. We're not going to get onto HMRC.
There are no grasses in my family.
Well, we know that for a fact. Well, not that are still with us anyway. Let's put it that way. Now, Doug is a Man United season ticket holder who says that the club called him recently to say that in response to an FA instruction, all season tickets will be changed from cards to digital. Now, Doug says he can't see the safety benefit, which is apparently behind it, but he can see fans being inconvenienced, mainly because Old Trafford is a notorious phone signal a black spot, then that inconvenience would just be to save production and shipping costs. Now, I'm slightly perturbed about this because, in the Arthur Waite stand at Sellers Park, you can't get a signal for love nor money. And if this is the case, this would discriminate against older fans who are not au fait with technology. So I'm hoping this isn't a precedent, Kieran, is it? This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I've dug into this. I went on to the Manchester United website. Now, from what I've seen on the website, this is an issue which is applying at present to season 2020-21. Now, if it's going to be the way forwards, I think there are potentially separate issues.
Yeah, okay.
So the rationale behind the use of e-tickets is it is better from a COVID secure perspective. You can use your smartphone. You're not physically, you know, having to put your card or give your card to somebody to check and things of this nature. So if it's being done purely on a short term COVID secure basis, and certainly when I went to the Amex to see us play in one of the COVID matches, it was on an e-ticket basis.
Right.
That's okay. I can live with that. If going forwards, it's going to be the way. What are the benefits to the club? Well, as Doug said, that there will be cost savings, but they'll be pretty you know, minimal.
Yeah.
Given you know, you're handing over 600, 700, 800 quid, whatever it's going to be, and they're saving themselves the price of a stamp and a smart card. In terms of the issues to do with Wi-Fi, and again, yeah, we've said football is, you know, it is part of the entertainment sector. Well, for Christ's sake, make yourself Wi-Fi compliant. We're not in 1994, and we've just discovered 28.8K modems and waiting for, you know, 4 minutes to download a birthday card and things of that nature. There's no reason for it to be such a poor standard, because, you know, it's been proven in the new stadiums that it can be done. So therefore, it's simply a case of just spend the money to get it done. Fans deserve more. If you are going to have e-tickets, presumably there would have to be an option to print, to have print at home, but not everybody is a printer at home. What I would do is, as soon as I got my ticket, I would then take a photograph of it. But as you rightly said, some fans aren't au fait with the technology. Not everybody's got a smartphone. Yeah, you know, most people do, but you know, why should we restrict it? There is also, you know, in theory, I've heard that there could be benefits in terms of security. In terms of, well, if it goes to one person and one person's phone only, then how, you know, it will stop people from touting. Again, my experience of this is that there's always ways and means. I've got connections, Kevin. You know, I know, and especially at places like Old Trafford at Anfield. You know, I've got a mate called Scratch Card, who has 60 season tickets, or has access to up to 60 season tickets at Old Trafford. So, you know, if they're playing Burnley or Southampton at home at 12:30 on a Saturday, then he'll, you know, at Old Trafford, you can always sell your ticket via to a tourist. And what will happen is that, you know, where these tickets are going to be. The way that the system works is that the person sitting the seat behind or the seat next is a friend of the season ticket holder. They get the text message. This person sits in WN345. Okay, mate, right, you're in the ground now. I'll have the ticket back. So everything works smoothly. The club doesn't really want to get involved in things of this nature. So that's how the system works.
Okay.
Could that work with e-tickets? These guys are smart. They'd work a way around that as well.
Of course they would. Well, you just pass somebody your mobile phone, don't you, and then get it back with them rather than a ticket. Talking of short-term solutions, Wayne Harris said, you know, during the current crisis, is there anything to stop Premier League clubs upping sticks to a country that would allow fans into grounds, like China, both from an income and marketing perspective? That's an interesting and devious thought, isn't it?
14 votes is the only thing that stops it. It's as simple as that. I mean, in theory, the FA does have a golden ticket when it comes to decisions, but I think if the clubs played the we're all going broke card, the FA doesn't particularly want to get involved in the Premier League. And, of course, we have seen some of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League matches taking place at third-party venues, for want of a better phrase. We've seen it happen in cricket as well. So it could certainly happen. I don't know whether the logistical costs and the fear of shipping the players at relatively short notice halfway around the world, because they'd have to go into a bubble when they got to China. Yeah. You couldn't have them going across once a week because the time differences and the time on the flight just simply wouldn't work. I suspect the players wouldn't be particularly happy. You know, many of them have got families, they've got kids and things of this nature. But 14 votes is all that is needed.
You surprised me there, Kieran, as I was expecting you to tell Wayne that it was an impossible idea. And that was a ludicrous science fiction futuristic sort of question. But it could easily happen. So thank you for that, Wayne.
Well, it's the 39th game all over again.
Well, I was about to say that because it's slightly different context. But if you the fuss about rightly so about the 39th game would be, I suppose, because then the fear would be that fans would say, OK, I can understand this temporary move to China, but then you'd think, the Premier League would be happy to keep that going, wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. Anyway, we need to keep going because we still have questions and we've got our eye on the clock, mainly because it's Sunday morning and Palace are kicking off against Fulham.
Come on, Palace! I feel so dirty.
Well, not as dirty as you felt putting a bet on Palace to beat Brighton with 4 minutes to go. Don't worry, I think we'll probably do what we did to you, which is the old rope-a-dope, and then Roy Hodgson can pretend that was we'll let Fulham punch themselves out. We're not expecting another back-heel double nutmeg. But talking of Palace, funny enough, and interestingly, with producer guys listening, Kieran and I managed to subconsciously find a link between each question, so maybe you could pay a little bit more attention, clump them together. Gavin Willacy, so in November, Premier Sports One, which is a premium paid-for channel, accidentally screened the first 40 minutes of Palace v Leeds live in the UK, and what a 40 minutes it was. It was meant, says Gavin, to be Cagliari v Sampdoria, according to the listings, but the free live coverage of a highly entertaining game, Gavin's words, not mine, continued on the premium channel till nearly half time. Now, Gavin wants to know if Premier Sports will be fined for this and what are the implications of a channel showing a live game in a market they have no right to?
Conceivably, they could be fined. They could be in breach of broadcasting regulations. But I suspect that given all that's been happening over the course of the last 12 months, it will just be a bit of finger wagging. The implications, if you're showing a live game in a market that you've got no rights to, is that there will be a rights holder in that country, and that rights holder could seek compensation for somebody effectively having a breach of contract. In terms of this was our match, or we've paid for the rights for 50 matches and you're getting one for free, so therefore we demand compensation either from the league itself or from the other broadcaster. Right. Our silver-tongued friends will be sharpening their pencils on this one.
Even though it seemed like it was a mistake, I mean, Gavin said it was clearly the Irish TV coverage that they were getting. So, and clearly someone's just pressed the wrong button and not really noticed it's been going out, haven't they?
Yeah, okay.
Nigel Phillips has a question directed straight at you, Kieran, and I don't blame him. There's really no point asking me to get involved in these things. Nigel Phillips, could Kieran explain what level of transparency there is related to players coming from overseas? When we see a report of, say, a £72 million transfer fee, in brackets, like Pepe, do Lille have to report what they actually received from the fee? I know Premier League clubs have to disclose fees to agents or intermediaries, but do overseas selling clubs have to as well?
It varies from country to country. In Italy, they've got fantastic disclosure in terms of the amounts paid for individual players and the amounts paid to agents. In my view, Juventus have the most detailed and, from my point of view, forensically exciting set of accounts. And I said that with a straight face, of any club going. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that there's nothing to stop clubs disclosing more. They will say that it's commercially sensitive information, and therefore they will simply go along with legislation. Legislation gives you a lowest common bar. And this is where potentially a football regulator can come in. It's supposed to be a fan-led review. If we had a fan-focused regulator, then we could have more details of this nature. It's the club owners' money, but we're the people that are paying the TV subscriptions, buying the merchandise, and paying for the we do contribute. We don't contribute as much as some owners. I'll be the first to admit to that. Manchester United used to be absolutely fantastic with regards to this. That they would say the length of contract, the amount they paid for contracts, it used to be absolutely really good stuff. And then the Glazers came along, and it was, well, we don't have to show this, and we're not going to. And you can understand it from their point of view, but once again, self-regulation doesn't work.
Well, Kieran, talking of merchandise, and your subconscious is really on fire because we're straight into a merchandise question. But it's an interesting one from Steve Drake, who I assume is a Portsmouth fan himself, because Steve Drake tells us that he's been really impressed recently by the variety of products sold by Portsmouth through their club store. So, for example, framed pieces of goal net from the League Two winning season, match-worn shirts, not sure that's a brilliant idea at the moment, players' old boots, signs from around the ground, etc. And Steve says, I wonder whether Kieran and Kevin have seen novel examples from other clubs. Well, I certainly haven't seen any pieces of framed net from a title-winning season at Palace, not unless they've kept them from 1923. But we used to do a nice line in garden gnomes. I've still got those. And you can actually, and this is one of the saddest, I went onto the Palace Club shop yesterday to check. This is one of the saddest things I've seen. You can still get a miniature Max Meyer. the same size as the actual Max Meyer, but it's been reduced to a pound, which is, we've got 2,000 miniature Max Meyers. What are we going to do with them? Literally, no one's buying a miniature Max Meyer even for a pound. Kieran, I presume you can still get official Brighton Labradors, can't you?
Certainly. I remember when it was 2005, we rather cunningly came out with three kits, all of which were blue. And then they had to go and bring out one-off kits when they were playing an opponent who was playing in blue. And in fact, when we went to Leicester, we had to borrow Leicester's away kit. So they did sell those one-off kits to raise some money. I've looked at some others, and some of the more bizarre ones. Arsenal used to sell pairs of slippers, which. Every step you put down, there was a little microphone in it, and it would you'd be able to hear the noises of the Emirates. Sort of, they'd recorded some. I've no idea how many of these were sold. Manchester City, you can buy a Manchester City suspender belt in cobalt blue or whatever they call it.
Of course you can.
Whether it plays Blue Moon or not, I don't know. And Fulham, you can get the official Fulham plant pot.
Nice.
Which has got the Fulham logo on. So yeah, there is somebody from marketing at all meetings desperate to make an impression on the chief executive, and they are the people that come up with things of this nature.
Yeah, so you notice how disciplined I was about the slippers that make the noise of the Emirates. I've allowed people all over the world to fill in their own punchline. For that. I mean, hats off to Portsmouth though, because in a time when every penny counts, a little bit of imaginative selling is, because let's face it, fans will buy virtually anything if it's got their club crest or club colours on it. So I'm all for it. I think Portsmouth have done a very good thing. Jacob Frick is a regular listener, I know, and Jacob won't realise this, but he's asked a question which is really, really, really upset me. As Jacob Frick says, I recently watched the TV show Ted Lasso, or Lasso, I don't know how you pronounce it, I don't care, about an American coaching a fictional Premier League club in London. Now, the reason this is a bit of a sore spot for me, this, Jacob, is I was recently asked to audition for a small role in Ted Lasso, which was actually based on me. and I didn't get it, which I still The cast, my agent phoned up and the casting director said it's kind of like what Kevin did on Match of the Day 2, just be a cameo role. Basically, it's him, but we do have to show it to the Americans. So I did this little audition piece and the Americans said, no, basically, we need to get someone else to play him.
The part of Kevin Day.
Basically, so I'm still slightly tender about it, Jacob, but, you know. The show, this has made it even worse because the scene would have been at Sellers Park because they filmed most of it at Sellers Park and at Hayes and Yedding. But Jacob would like to know how much would those clubs have been paid and how much would the show have had to pay to use the many trademarks and sponsors' names that appear?
Right. In the place of the football grounds themselves, it would just be a rental fee. So you will rent the ground for X pounds per day. It'll be just like any corporate gig. So the commercial department will have arranged that with the show producers. The actual amounts, you know, clearly is a private contract between two parties. In respect of the kit and so on, I would say there's a case for saying there should be a reversal because this is product placement. Mm. You know, if you take a look at Ted Lasso, and I don't want to upset you any further, but I watched the first series and it was magnificent. It was very, very good. Yes, it was cliched to the nth degree, but it was well written. And in practically every scene involving a computer, they just happened to be using, you know, an iMac or a MacBook or because hey, it's on Apple TV. You know, normally in the world of entertainment, you know, TV shows and so on, they will get bonuses paid to them for product placement. So, you know, if there is a finance scene in the show, yeah, and they want a book on football finance, you know, we can negotiate.
That would be the ultimate kick in the teeth, wouldn't it? If you end up getting in there. Playing,
yes.
We've got a scene where Ted Lasso needs to talk to a football finance expert, and it's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, you can say it's a brilliant program as much more. The amount of stick you've taken about Brighton recently, I've got no choice but to sit here and take the stick about how good Ted Lasso is with or without me. Our final question comes from Adam Bull. Adam says, I've always thought of football as being one of the greatest successes of the UK economy. But considering all the press about Brexit and the fishing industry recently, I'd like to know how much football is worth in comparison to fishing. Now, Adam wins the prize for most unexpected question.
Yes.
I have to say, really, I kind of read that several times thinking, no. But actually, the more I think about it, it's a very interesting comparison because I think it would help people to know just how much football means to the economy. Those of us who work in the entertainment industry are always pointing out that it's the single most biggest source of income. Entertainment, mainly through West End Theatre, but it's bigger than the airline industry. It's bigger than all sorts of things. So people need to know how important football is. And Adam's quite right. Fishing seems to have borne the brunt of any complications with Brexit recently. So it would be an interesting comparison, wouldn't it?
Yes. So I went into the government website. The fishing industry, the value of the catch that it brought in was £987 million in 2019. So yeah, it's a £1 billion a year industry. To then contextualize it against football clubs themselves in England and Scotland and Wales. They generated around about £6.5 billion. So football is 6 to 7 times the size of fishing directly. And then I think you've got to look at indirectly. Yeah, you know, what about merchandise? Could that be? What about the broadcasting companies themselves, which are, you know, provide employment and they provide exports and things of this nature? So it is very successful, and it's a very successful export business because around about 50% of the money that is generated is coming from overseas TV deals and things of that nature, certainly overseas commercial partners. And then there is football tourism, which is relatively new. You know, I've said before, I've lived in Manchester for 40 years of my life. I work in Liverpool. When Liverpool and Manchester United are playing at home, you can tell the difference. You know, you talk to the taxi drivers, you try to get hold of you can't get a room in a hotel when Liverpool are playing at home. So that they are, that there's a, there's a supply chain to those industries, which is also impacted. So, yeah, I think football's very successful. That is on the back of the Premier League. That is on the back of the major clubs. And you know, nobody begrudges them the fact that they earn a lot more money on the back of that. I think my view is that they don't need to have even more. You know, they're just getting greedy at present.
And of course, the fishing industry will have an indirect influence on other industries. I mean, when all this is over and restaurants and hotels are open again properly, if you know places like Padstow, which have several fishing restaurants or seafood restaurants, if they can't get fish, they're not going to open either, are they? I mean, so it will, you know, the fish finger industry will stuff up. I mean, there's all sorts. It's very difficult to sort of just say this is how much an industry earns and that's it, because every industry has is a link in the chain, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And it's my birthday tonight, and the Baroness is cooking me sea bass Penang. So she's been out to the local fish store, and she's cooking me my favourite fish based dish.
Well, listen, if she doesn't love you enough to go to Malaysia to get fresh ingredients for your sea bass Penang, then that's happy birthday, Kieran. I didn't realise that, and well done for dropping that in. And now I feel terrible now for just willy-nilly taking the mickey out of Brighton and penalties and referees, and I should have been saying happy birthday.
I've reached the stage now where watching us has become funny.
Well, good. I'm glad you're getting zebra. I'm about to get a sausage sandwich brought out to me by Ellie. It's a culturally appropriate food for South London.
Oh, yeah.
If you have any questions for our next pod, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. That's any aspect of the football industry, as you've heard, no matter how tangential, we will answer them. It's questions@priceoffootball.com. And I'll hand you over, as always, for Kieran to say goodbye. And if he could do it without mentioning Lee Mason, I'd be amazed.
Well, thanks again, folks, for the feedback. If you're enjoying the show, if you could give us a review on Apple, myself and Kevin, we don't understand how it works, but it's producer guy says it helps us in the ratings. It helps him to book guests when we're in the charts and things of this nature. You don't have to say nice things about us. You could give us a 5-star review. It's the stars that matter, not the comments. So you can say you'd rather the show was presented by Edwina Curry and Lee Mason, but it's entirely up to you. Other than that, stay safe. Look after yourselves.
Bye.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.